our presenter tonight, we're on the 11th tradition, and I was trying to think of what I could say about him, and he handed me a AA resume. He's got his own credentials. No, I'm just kidding. But we're on the 11th tradition tonight, and one of my favorite people in the program is presenting. And most of us know him, and he's a terrific member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Just give a welcome to Bill C.
Bill Paul. I got me in these white folders like everybody else has been bringing. I know the most charming thing you can do is ask someone to speak and then not be there. If you want to win me as a friend, do that. I'll deal with Lou later. I am Bill Crawford, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Bill.
And I am thrilled to death. You know, this is intimidating. Other speakers have said that because this is not like getting up and telling your story, which is, which I tell people, it's kind of hard to screw up your own story. You're kind of in safe ground there within God's hands and doing what you're supposed to do. But this is almost kind of like being a spokesman for AA. I know we're not, but it's almost as implicit in this is that you're kind of speaking with authority. And believe me, I'm not. I've just been around a long time. This is intimidating because I followed some excellent speakers, with the exception of Lou. and also because of the people that are here, the creme de la creme are in attendance, and I realize this, and I respect that. I even made some notes. Kay Typer, my typist, Kay, came tonight, and to make sure that I did this right. I'm going to try not to read to you, but I did put down some things that I didn't want to misquote. We've heard so much about why we're doing this, and why we're doing this is because many of us hold dear this fellowship and what holds the fellowship together. And this is what does it, the traditions. The traditions protect us against ourselves. Traditions keep us from doing what comes naturally. As do the steps. The secret of the steps, of course, is that we do those unnatural things to keep ourselves in an unnatural state of being sober. The traditions, I think, is as a body, as a group, we do unnatural things. We act against our natures, if you will, and we end up in an unnatural state of being unified and on the same course, which is not much like us. I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous a long time. I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous over half my life. And that's not because I gained character or found some willpower that I didn't know I had or got smart or anything. It's due to the grace of God, and everybody in this room knows that. And because the program of Alcoholics Anonymous works for everybody I've ever known that works. And if you belong in Alcoholics Anonymous and you do it, it works for you. And people that don't belong in Alcoholics Anonymous that try it, it go away. It sort of takes care of itself. I was listening to Dr. Dean O'Dell. Does anybody know who that is? It's on the radio. And apparently something came up. I sort of got in the middle of it. Something came up about somebody had written a book about Alcoholics Anonymous is claiming that you got to have God and this kind of thing to do it. And this sort of flies in the face of our independent nature and the people who resent the fact that that's suggesting that one can't do it for himself. And that was a big argument. A lot of people called in. Some of us called in. You know, I don't mean people in this room, but some members of AA, obviously militant AA members like me, called in and gave Dr. Dean O'Dell hell for even saying this kind of thing. But I thought, you know, the whole point is that this is what Alcoholics Anonymous is for. Alcoholics Anonymous has never said, if you can do it yourself, don't do it yourself, come in and do it with us. It's always said, if you can't do it yourself, if you are powerless over alcohol, then this is the outfit for you. If you ain't, you ain't. I mean, nobody's going to argue with that. If you can go out there and quit drinking and have the good life on your own, then, of course, Alcoholics Anonymous is not for you. It is for being powerless. And so the protection of this society, this movement, for the benefit of those of us who are powerless over alcohol is more than just important. It is a matter of life and death. Now, some of this that we talk about, some of the things you've heard other speakers talk about and complain about, has to do with kind of that old against the new. Old geezers like me resisting new people doing new things. So just a lot of it is that. And I can remember, you know, that we've heard a lot of the things about the chanting or rapping after the Lord's Prayer and this kind of thing. It's just kind of, it's not so much making a moral judgment on that. Many times, on some of those things, it's just the old against the new. And part of it is unimportant. And part of it is guarding that very precious thing that we don't want to lose. We don't want it too diluted, us old guys. And that's part of that's this. I can remember, I came into AA long enough ago that they didn't say hey to you when you got up to podium. You know, when I got up and said, I'm Bill Crawford, I'm an alcoholic, or when Duck got up and said, I'm Howard, and I'm an alcoholic, everybody said, hi, Bill, hi, Howard. And I can remember when they didn't do that. They did it at conferences. And then they started doing it in the regular groups, in the hometown groups there in Greensboro. The old timers raised hell about that. And old man Paul Howard, that would come only to one group, my home group, storm out because we were the one group that didn't say hey to people when they got up. Now we eventually did it. He quit coming at all, but people raised hell about that. I can remember my sponsor saying, by God, I ain't going to hold anybody's damn hand when we say the Lord's Prayer, because I remember when that became fashionable. And then in a few months, he grabbed his hand and everybody else and right in on the deal. But the resistance to those kinds of things is understandable. And sometimes I think if things are supposed to survive, they do. And if things aren't, they won't. But at least that's what I hope. And I think alcoholics, just by very nature, maybe human nature, but I want to believe that alcoholic natures, we want to embellish everything. You know? It's not just good enough to say the Lord's Prayer and amen. We've got to do 5 minutes of, you know, that other stuff. And I remember when it was got very fashionable to add things to being an alcoholic. Instead of saying, I'm Bill Crawford and I'm an alcoholic, you add things. I'm a grateful alcoholic. I'm powerless over you. They used to come out of Texas and they go for 3 minutes. I'm powerless over people, alcohol, you know, bad breath. They'd go on and on and on and on. So, you know, it's just that kind of embellishing and adding stuff. It's kind of our nature. But sometimes I think what we're doing is trying to temper that a little bit. So if that's understandable. So I think, like I say, I'm not sure what's important that we discourage or fight against that comes along new and what is not important. And maybe it takes care of itself. Some things that are. Now, I'm supposed to be up here talking about the 11th tradition. And we've heard enough about the history of AA and how the traditions came into being. Essentially, they came into being because of just what I said. To have some sort of outline for a course of action that is against what we would naturally do. In other words, as we would screw up in the old days of AA, that would create a tradition. So let me just, by way of reminder, I know you all have this memorized, but let me read the 11th tradition. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. Let me read them all. Our relations with the general public should be characterized by personal anonymity. We think AA ought to avoid sensational advertising. Our names and pictures as AA members ought not be broadcast, filmed, or publicly printed. Our public relations should be guided by the principle of attraction rather than promotion. There's never need to praise ourselves. We feel it better to let our friends recommend us. Now, this is the deal. There's the anonymity that we think about, that I don't go out of here and tell people that Keith's an Alcoholics Anonymous. That's that deal when we're talking about the disclosing of someone's membership in AA. This is the part of the deal where it's telling you keep your mouth shut about you. And they did it right from the start when the book was published in 1939. The foreword to the first edition said, "When writing or speaking publicly about alcoholism, we urge each of our fellowship to omit his personal name, designating himself instead as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous." So right from the get-go, they said, don't do that. Don't go out to the public and tell about your membership. So this was not exactly something that came along as a new concept with the traditions necessarily. They knew, Bill Wilson knew, and the 100 collaborators to the big book, they knew that it was wrong and destructive to go public with anonymity. Of course, right off the bat, people did, and people had. And we'll talk a little bit about, I don't want to get into too much history about Bill Wilson, but, you know, as some of you know, Bill Wilson was a great anonymity breaker, a great promoter. And promoter was probably the adjective that we put with Bill Wilson more than any other thing. And, of course, we're trying to do the opposite of that, or what's implied is the opposite of that. Defining what public relations is. There's sometimes confusion, or I think there's confusion about that. Some people confuse public relations of this tradition with 12-step work, or the 12-step. That's two different animals. 12-step work is our staying alive policy. That's not a public relations policy. A lot of people think we go around grinning and looking happy and successful that we will attract Alcoholics Anonymous to join Alcoholics Anonymous, alcoholics to join Alcoholics Anonymous. That's not the way we recruit our membership. Recruit our membership on one-on-one 12-step calls or sharing our experience, strength, and hope. Public relations has to do with dealing with the outside public, dealing with the community out there, whether they happen to be alcoholic, potential alcoholic, or otherwise, that world out there. It is the relations with the public, those entities, those people, those communities, those societies, those institutions outside of this movement. That's what it is. Is it important? I'm going to read to you from the 12 concepts. This is a quote from the 12 concepts. To reach more alcoholics, understanding of AA and public goodwill towards AA must go on growing everywhere. We need to be on still better terms with medicine, religion, employers, governments, courts, prisons, mental hospitals, and all enterprises in the alcoholism field. We need the increasing goodwill of editors, writers, television, and radio channels. These publicity outlets need to be opened even wider. The authors of our concepts and other reference to this matter in our literature says it's very important. It's urgent in many ways that we remain the public goodwill and that our press is good. And most of the bad press that's come to Alcoholics Anonymous has come either from us or because of us. I happen to look up attraction in the dictionary because I noticed some of the other speakers looked it up, you know, the words in the dictionary, and I liked what it said. This is from the American College Dictionary. That which allures or entices. And all those have been allured or enticed, and we know what that means. Promotion is a different deal. That which lures. I'd like to think that our fellowship, because what we're doing, and largely, many times what we're not, or in many ways what we're not doing, is alluring and enticing. Now, most organizations that have come along and done any good at all or tried to do any good at all have done it by very much publicizing their membership. Anytime you start anything, you'll have a board or something, you go get the most prominent citizens in town, and you get their names on the letterhead, and you accomplish or achieve credibility and maybe a favorable impression in that community because of the standing, the status of the people that are identified with whatever enterprise that you're trying to promote. Now, this kind of flies in the face of all that. We've talked about it some in the previous 10 weeks. This kind of operates differently from that, or in diametrically different from that in many ways. So any political party that you've ever been attached to, or charities or whatever, usually promote themselves with the personalities that are involved. And we don't do that. Out of AA Comes of Age, Bill says, we had to soberly face the fact that being in the public eye is hazardous, especially for us. Now, I think he meant that in two ways. I think he meant that being in the public eye is hazardous for Bill Crawford. It could kill him. To get publicity, to gain fame, to gain notoriety or whatever, could be destructive for me as an individual. But I think more importantly, he means that to be in the public eye for the fellowship, for this movement, could destroy us. Especially hazardous for us. So again, we have to act against what is natural for human beings on a whole, and especially attractive to folks like us, to get some sort of fame and glamour. From Pass It on page 307, anonymity was originally practiced for reasons that had to do with the experimental nature of the society and the prevailing stigma on alcoholism. Later developed a more spiritual connotation, more importance to the survival of AA. In other words, in the beginning, because this was kind of an experiment and we didn't know, when the big book was written, it was saying we have to remain anonymous because we couldn't respond to the voluminous calls and inquiries we'd get about the book, and because of the stigma, et cetera, that was attached to alcoholism. Later, it became important as regards our survival. It became important as our salvation, not just to protect us from the stigmatic connotation of alcoholism. The first big anonymity break was a guy by the name of Raleigh H. He was a famous baseball player. And he got out and he got some notoriety and started making speeches and hit the papers and all this kind of stuff and credited Alcoholics Anonymous with saving his life. And boy, everybody loved him, and he was on the radio and in the newspapers and the whole deal. And the deal was it helped Alcoholics Anonymous. Hell, it brought in a lot of people, brought in a lot of favor, or it brought in a lot of respect from the important community out there. But what it did in the long term, it made people, especially Bill Wilson, look at his own self and his own behavior. It caused Bill to examine his own transgressions. He concluded the deeper meaning of anonymity was actually to keep those fooled egos of ours from running hog wild after money and public fame at AA's expense. Now, we don't know about Raleigh H. much, because that was a long time ago, but we know Elizabeth Taylor. We know John Daly. He's the most famous. Now, usually what happens to the people, public figures who break their anonymity are usually the ones who embarrass us. They're not usually the ones who succeed. They found out a long time ago that people who sort of went on the rooftops soapbox about their involvement in Alcoholics Anonymous, famous or otherwise, were the ones who could probably, who probably would give AA a black eye. Now, John, not picking on John Daly, he's one of my heroes, but old John comes out and talks about how he's going to meetings every once in a while. Then old John goes to jail, and that hits the paper. So he's not a good advertisement for Alcoholics Anonymous. And generally speaking, these are the people who more often are exploitive about their own membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. So AA is simply saying, don't do that. If you're in the public eye, don't give us that kind of advertising. You know, there was the spirit of anonymity, or this kind of anonymity at the public level. A lot of times we want to be very legalistic, you know, and saying, well, I'm not really breaking anonymity. You know, I'm not really breaking anonymity. I'm really guarding the 11th tradition of anonymity, but... I'm on TV and they showed the back of my head, let's say. But if everybody knows what the back of my head looks like, and I'm a fairly famous fella, I am violating the intent of anonymity. There was a hell of an article 100 years ago, it seems like, in the Grapevine. It's got to be 25 years ago. And I can remember this guy's thesis was, and I thought it was of some value, was, you know, these people that, and I'm not saying anything particularly against this, but the bumper stickers, you know. And he's saying the guy that's got, I'm a friend of Bill's, and circles and triangles, and easy does it, and, you know, one day at a time, and all over his car and everything, maybe not breaking the anonymity tradition in the strictest sense, but most people nowadays know what all that means. So he's saying, in spirit, this individual is, at the very least, misunderstanding what we mean by anonymity. It's not saying to you, don't tell people you're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous when it's important, when it's wise, when it's spiritual to do so, when it might help somebody, when it might be important that that person know because he's your doctor or your preacher or your mother or a father or somebody close that needs to know. That's not what it's saying. It's saying don't brag about our membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. One thing that I may be able to do if I publicize too much my membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. And believe me, when I came into AA, it was not stigmatic exactly. It upgraded me a little bit socially. As most of you know, I'd been kicked out for life from the Bamboo Lounge at the time. So it was not shameful to be a member of AA. So, but for me, and you know, I was a little bit, when I was new, I was kind of ashamed of it. I was afraid somebody'd know I joined Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know what I was ashamed of, because like I say, if you can't go back to the Bamboo Lounge, being a member of anything is a hell of an endorsement. But one of the things that I can do if I say that, if I tell people when I'm walking, they say, I saw you walk into that building and at East Boulevard, and I say, well, I was going into an AA meeting, I may need to be careful because it may be, if they know you're in here too, I may be, by implication, breaking your anonymity, which is very important. So the protection of other people's anonymity is implied here. If I publicize my membership, It's not only bad for me, and it's just bad that when I get in trouble, that's going to cause the fellowship trouble, but it may violate somebody else's anonymity. So all Alcoholics Anonymous is saying by this, the authors of these traditions, in this tradition particularly, is that we're kind of wacko when it comes to this kind of ego feature anyway, that we wish that most people who are inclined to do this are not the people who we want, particularly that we don't want advertised as members of Alcoholics Anonymous, so don't do it. I'm going to switch on the other half to the other side of this deal, because that's why I was given this tradition, just to talk about the other side of this deal, because I got famous there for a short period of time about the other end of the deal. Let me state this, and this I'll let y'all make a bumper sticker if you want to, just for a little while. Let me say this emphatically. You cannot break your anonymity at an AA meeting. Let me repeat that. You cannot break your anonymity at an AA meeting. Now, we have the traditions or the steps are not just something we have and do. They belong to Alcoholics Anonymous. Do you know that? The 12 steps are copyrighted by Alcoholics Anonymous. We own them. We own the traditions. And as has been said before, when people talk about the Washingtonians and the Oxford groups and these groups that have withered and died and everything, because they've had not had something like the traditions to guide them, protect them, and keep them from self-destructing, you know that we give these things to anybody who wants. If you want to start anything, if you want to start Bushy Eyebrows Anonymous, whatever you want to start, you can do it. You can have 12 steps. There's no fee. There's no copyright violation or anything. You can do it. Now, all we have to do is see all the other anonymouses that have started who have not, they've adopted our steps, so to speak, but have not adopted tradition and have come and gone. Now, some have come and stayed. Narcotics Anonymous, thank God. Gamblers Anonymous. Some of these outfits have not only come along and stayed, but have thrived. And we want them to, because of the dilution of purpose statement from Bill Wilson, that we want to encourage these other problems, people with a problem, to have self-help support groups, so that they don't feel the need to come here. If they don't have a desire to stop drinking, if they're not alcoholic, when they're tempted to come here, what we want to do is encourage, no, go ahead and start your own. This is for the alcoholic. So we want to encourage them. We not only want to encourage them and give the steps and traditions to these people, we want to give them anything. Anything that has worked for us, that has been... And there are many things besides the steps and traditions that have worked for us that they can benefit from our experience. For example, the things we were just talking about, the opening with the Serenity Prayer, the closing of the Lord's Prayer. Probably most self-help support groups use these things too. And other ways, other meeting formats and these kinds of things that are like us. So we want to give them and let them enjoy and copy, mimic anything that we have. I think, this is my opinion, I'm going to label this as my opinion, I think it's probably not nearly as valuable for us to adopt a lot of their stuff. Now, not because they're wrong, it's because they're the new people, and hopefully we have the experience, we have the history to benefit them. Because most of them, even the oldest, and I think probably the most successful offshoot, if you will, is Narcotics Anonymous. Even I can remember in Charlotte when I first came here almost 16 years ago, there was hardly any Narcotics Anonymous. There was two meetings at the over there in Billingsley, Randolph Clinic, and nothing else. Now there's Narcotics Anonymous all over town. You know what has helped Narcotics Anonymous survive more than any one single thing, in my opinion, outside of the fact that God works and the addiction works with pain, is because we have discouraged them from being with us. If we had diluted our purpose, if we had embraced them and other people in very freely in Alcoholics Anonymous and said, oh, well, it's okay. You don't have a desire to stop drinking, but, you know, you smell funny too, so come on in. It would have not allowed them to be forced to thrive and survive. But I think what we have done, my opinion again, is we have included maybe some other things from these other byproducts of AA, if you will, into ours. And I think that maybe has bothered some of the old geezers. And maybe that's where some of the rapping after the Lord's Prayer and so forth and this kind of acting out has come from. This may be where the first name only deal has come from in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's, you know, I've gotten into heated discussions about this and preached about it, and the people I sponsor, I've got them so scared that if they just use their first name, I'm going to kill them and all that, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So I probably overreacted. But again, my bumper sticker: you can't break anonymity in an AA meeting. Now, I'll preach a little bit about this. There may be other fellowships out there where it's, and again, it's okay if you just want to use a fake name. And I said kiddingly to somebody, if you want to use a number, you know, nobody's going to kick you out. Well, I'm number 417, if that's what you want to say. Nobody's going to run you out, you know. But let me tell you what I think is the importance of, let's not adopting that sort of thing over here. First of all, there's probably a lot less worry in rooms like this that there's going to be somebody from some governmental agency planted there to take names. You know, there's no, you know, usually illegal substances and this kind of thing are not discussed here. So those kind of obvious things are not there. But let me tell you the positive thing, as far as I'm concerned, about using our whole name. And again, this is why Lou asked me to talk about this, because I was so militant about this for a while. There should be here above anywhere, in my opinion, my experience, a trust level beyond anything else we've experienced. If I am dying and I come here to trust you and this thing that we're celebrating to save my life, if I'm placing my life in your hands, so to speak, which is what I did. Now, when I came, let me say again about AA and back to Dr. Dean O'Dell. I didn't come to AA because life was getting inconvenient or I was being embarrassed more, or I needed something extra on my resume. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I was dying. My bag of tricks was empty. Now, this doesn't have to be true with everybody. I'm not suggesting that it should be or is. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was out of schemes and plans. I had run out of rope. This was it, the last place. And so when I got here, I did, in a very real way, place my life in your hands. Now, it wasn't like I had a lot of choice in the matter. Like I didn't say, well, I'm going to be magnanimous and give you my life and trust you. I did that because I just had given up. The surrender that we talked about. That does not reconcile with not trusting you to know what my damn name is. If I'm going to trust you with my soul, then I can trust you with who I am. Now, if someone new comes into my group and hears people speaking in code or giving first names only, I'm afraid that that person is going to sense an aura of distrust, an aura of an atmosphere of people not trusting each other. Now, that I don't want to see. I'm glad to see, and I think a lady that's a dear friend of mine from California said a lot of it's cultural, and a lot of it doesn't mean anything. It's just cultural. If you're from Southern California, that's what you say. I'm buffy and I'm biffy and whatever. You know, I'm an alcoholic. And that's just the trendy thing to do. And right, it doesn't mean anything. But again, I think let's take the best ideas from people who come here or who come from other fellowship and give them our best ideas instead of otherwise. So that's, I start to say, it's the end of the sermon. Not quite. but it's kind of it's a break in the sermon.
Okay. For those of you that have not heard of page 264 and Dr. Bob and the good old timer, have not been anywhere near me for a year. Because this is what I've talked about, and it's been required reading of those close to me. Required memory work for those close to me. I'm just going to read these paragraphs from Dr. Bob and the good old timer. This comes from Dr. Bob. This is someone quoting Dr. Bob. Now, Dr. Bob, Robert Smith, is the recognized co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. Dr. Bob with Bill Wilson, because of their connection, the 12-step call, that original 12-step call, and Dr. Bob's finally getting sober after a relapse, made the beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous. So from their experience and very much their input, and of course Bill Wilson's ability to do prose, the writings, teachings, the written word, and certainly the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous came about. Dr. Bob said there were two ways to break the anonymity tradition. This is tradition 11, the one we're talking about tonight. One, by giving your name at the public level of press or radio. Two, this is before TV, by the way. Two, by being so anonymous that you can't be reached by other drunks. Now, one of the things some of y'all know that I had the good fortune to work in the alcoholics business, the alcoholic business, the substance abuse, as they call it now. What I do for a living is I work with people new into recovery. And one of my preachments, and in fact I had a group today and I was talking to them, a big admonition of mine is don't deny your socialization in this fellowship. Now, there are people in Alcoholics Anonymous that apparently probably do very well, just as much as the AA who permits his name to appear in the press in connection with matters pertaining to AA.
What's given name?
Pardon?
Well,
the traditional definition, that's a given name and a surname. My given name is George William Bill, and my surname is Crawford. The name that was given to me was Bill. The name that I inherited was Crawford. Is that right? Okay. Yeah, are you okay with that definition? Okay. Okay, that's... I just made it up. But by golly, I know what he means. You know what I'm saying? Let me tell you the anonymity story. There's a gal, and God love her, she's dead. Good gal, good friend. Ann was the kind of girl, her name was Ann Wren. And she was the kind of gal that came to meetings for a year drunk, you know, but she kept coming and finally got sober and predated me and died sober with, what, honey, 25 years sobriety, some long time. Yeah, certainly over 20 years. And long before it became fashionable, Ann was just say Ann, you know, way back in the 60s, 70s, you know what I mean? And we teased her about it, and the guy started calling her Ann Anonymity. Was her name, and kind of kidded about. Well, a guy named Cecil came to town. Cecil was a drifter, and he started hanging around the club. And Ann would come down to the noon meeting down at the club, and she met old Cecil. And Cecil sort of took a liking to him, and she was kind to him, and they sort of had sort of a friendship. They were not socialized, but they had sort of a friendship, and Cecil got drunk. And he knew that Ann, because he'd come up, worked for the Department of Social Services there in Greensboro, which employs a couple of thousand people. And when Cecil decided to reach out, he thought about Ann. So he called the Department of Social Services. asked Big Dan. He said, "Ann who?" He said, "I don't know, but she's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous." So they polled the building for everybody named Ann until they finally located Ann. And it cured Ann of using just her first name. So it can backfire. So forgive me for being too noisy. Can y'all tell I don't like that particular thing? But anyway, I think a lot of times, and thank you for indulging me on that, all that preaching and that ire about that and this kind of thing, but I think a lot of times when that sort of thing comes up, when that's done, it's like my friend Lindy said from California, and she's a mighty good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not somebody really trying to act against the tradition. It's not even somebody trying to be different or make a statement on a particular philosophy. It's just somebody, I think it's our misunderstanding of what this tradition means. This tradition is made to protect us. It's not to be secretive. It's not to uphold what we think is stigmatic about our condition. It's to protect us from ourselves, not from other people. I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous nearly 31 years, and I swear to God, I'll swear on a stack of Bibles, I have never, never, not once, seen anybody even hurt in any minor way by the disclosure of the knowledge that he or she has been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've never seen anybody hurt because, now, please believe me, let me admonish anybody, don't tell anybody that I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous outside this room without my permission or anybody. So, you know, let me make that very clear. But I've never seen anybody hurt by that. I've seen a couple of times where it's made some people mad and there's been some embarrassment and maybe some heated feelings between some folks, but I've never seen anybody seriously, their careers, their families, their standing in the community hurt by that. And now it's gotten so downright upright to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous that you wish a little stigma would come back so some of these people would shut up about it. Because every time somebody, some politician or something or famous person gets in trouble, it's immediately what they want to say. Forgive me, I've joined AA. You know? So I wish that it was a little bit more stigmatic, but I'm, you know, even in the old days or in my old days, I never remember anybody having any real serious harm. I've known a lot of people to bring upon themselves pretty serious harm when they violated this 11 tradition about themselves, about their own affiliation, when they started misusing, abusing their membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank God that we still can't put this on resume. We still can't use this. Not in keeping with the tradition, if we still cannot use this for our material benefit. That's the beauty of Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me finish what I think is a real good thing that comes out of with what I think is a real good thing that Bill wrote. It comes from a letter, and I found it in as Bill sees it. He, and I don't know to whom the letter was written or anything, it's just an excerpt from a letter that he wrote. In some sections of AA, anonymity is carried to the point of real absurdity. Members are on such a poor basis of communication that they don't even know each other's last names or where each lives. It's like the cell of an underground. In other sections, we see exactly the reverse. It is difficult to restrain AA from shouting too much before the whole public by going on a spectacular lecture tours to play the big shot. However, I know that from these extremes, we slowly pull ourselves into a middle ground. Most lecture-giving members do not last, forgive me for giving this lecture tonight, do not last too long. And the super anonymous people are apt to come out of hiding respecting their AA friends, business associates, and the like.
I think the long-time trend is toward the middle of the road, which is probably where it should be. So with that, I will complete with about 10 minutes left. Has anybody got any arguments or questions? Jimmy.
I'm Jimmy C. I'm an alcoholic.
Jimmy said that for humor.
Jimmy Chadwick. I was in a situation recently where I had to do a job application. I had to check some things to be true. And I had to, for the benefit of being able to get something straight at the end of being hired, so that I wouldn't have to be called in early so I could make meetings. I had to just, you know, break my anonymity. Of course, what it did, it always cost me not getting a job, because they wanted to know what kind of footing I was running, was I sober on, was it going to drink again, and, you know, how does that go? I mean, as far as that, I guess what I'm asking is that, well, yeah, I mean, it almost hurt me, but at the same time, had I gotten on and haven't had to be called in 4 hours early or whatever, which they do quite a bit, and I said, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that, and I've been fired. But yeah, they missed the meetings all the time, too.
In my opinion, it has a lot less to do with this tradition or the traditions and more to do with that rigorous honesty part. And that's, you know, and you could argue that. Where are you rigorously honest? Who do we tell and who has a right to know? That's more, to me, Jimmy, it's more germane to that than it is to the tradition. Because there's certain people in my life that need to know. And many people think the boss is one of those people, and my doctor is one of those people, and that's not necessarily coming out of the letter tradition. It's what I've got. It's the people that have not only have a right to know, but for my own preservation, they need to know. I think you did the right thing to tell them for any reason. I have had one job since I've been sober where they didn't know, and it was a problem. I didn't tell them. I didn't think they could handle it, and it was difficult. And in looking back on it, I wish I'd have just said it, and they could have done what they wanted to do, and life would have been easier.
You know, Bill, on that
subject,
on your driver's license, you have to check on there if you've ever been addicted to alcohol or drugs or been in prison. And I have a check I've just left it blank, and I've not been called on it.
You know, that used to be death, by the way. If you did that, you know, they came
the insurance
and
goes
that
off.
Ran you out of the country and everything. I think that's better now. But again, that has nothing to do with the 11th tradition. Let me say this, too. There's a difference in saying I'm an alcoholic and I don't drink anymore or whatever, or I'm doing something about drinking, and saying I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everybody understand that? To say I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous is a violation of this tradition on a public level. To say I'm an alcoholic and I can't have that drink tonight because I'm an alcoholic, you may choose to do that. You could do that with an audience of a million, and that is not a violation of anonymity. But I think a lot of times, as I said before, movie stars are on TV and they'll say, you know, I can't tell you what worked, but I work steps and Easy does it, and, you know, I got a sponsor, and, you know, all that kind of stuff, and they talk all around it to really disclose their membership. But whatever you say about I'm an alcoholic and I've been in treatment and all this kind of stuff has nothing to do with this tradition. This is only about my membership, whether I'm a member.
I want to ask one other quick on this one comment. The only thing about anonymity is as far as using your last name, I've always had a problem with the new company from thinking the same from an hour to me, and everybody said in the last name.
And you just heard me say I feel the opposite. I think a newcomer hearing just first names would be more put off by an apparent clandestine, or what I would say is mistrust, but I have heard that suggestion before, and you may be right. But my opinion is that we would more encourage the newcomer by being open and honest there, and we can trust these people than the other. But you may be right. It depends on the newcomer.
People come into AA thinking they're anonymous, and they think about only as anonymous as far as their name is concerned. I think that's an outside perception. But it takes a training, but I do think I can remember feeling that way.
Okay. I'm just not so sure that we should change what we do to accommodate the sickest member. That's the newcomer.
Yeah.
I think we should bring him more to where we are, you know, rather than... I know at one time that it used to be the alcoholism counselor before they called them alcoholism, before they called them substance abuse counselors. They would, you know, they'd dress down, you know, the old bead and sandal bunch, the mental health type counselor. And somebody suggested, don't try to look like the patient. Try to, you know, look better and inspire the patient to look better, which is not an exact parallel, but there's something to be said about, instead of trying to get down where he is and accommodate that, let's do what we think is right and then bring him or her to that trust level. But that's, you're not the first that I've heard say that. But to me, again, it would seem it would be just the opposite, and maybe all of you disagree with me on that. 1 minute. Any other statements, questions? Thanks for the money. Thank you very much.